So, Berto, have you seen Eternal Sunshine of a Spotless Mind?
I sure have, or have I?
Well, that's what I want to talk about today, because listener Ricardo wrote in. He said, I like the fact that you discuss movies, which is one of my greatest passions. I believe that it's one of the most effective mediums to spread empathy, which is desperately needed nowadays. My favorite movie of all time is Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind. It's a total masterpiece. So that's what we're going to talk about today. This is the Psychology of Seattle podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Kirk Honda. I'm a therapist and a professor.
My name is Humberto Castañeda, and I wrote a hit play, so I'm not sweating it either.
So this is also one of my favorite movies. I will tell you where it ranks among my top movies after we analyze this, but I will tell you that this did win an Academy Award for Best Original Screenplay. But let's talk about what the main technology in this movie, which is what they called focused erasure of troubling memories.
Yes.
What do you think about this technology in the movie, Berto?
Yeah, it seems like an interesting idea when you first think about it. And then, of course, the more you think about it, it seems very troubling. But, you know, it's the appeal is, of course, you know, we've talked on the podcast a lot about trauma, you know, trauma as a child or people suffering from post-traumatic stress disorder. Imagine if you could, from your own choice, erase those traumatic memories. That seems very appealing.
Right. Yeah. I'll get more into that in a second. What do you think about the way it was portrayed visually and, you know, storyline-wise in the movie?
Obviously, it was a very sci-fi-ish or, you know, pseudo-sci-fi-ish kind of way, but it was a very compelling visual.
Yeah.
And it was fun. There was a lot of fun with it.
Yeah. I loved the way they portrayed this. He basically becomes sort of conscious as they are erasing his memories.
Yeah.
And so he's in his memories, walking around, interacting with his old memories.
Yeah.
And it was just a beautiful way to do it. And there's very little CGI. 99% of the way they depict this this experience for him is completely done with practical effects.
And this was done, I mean, what year was this? 98?
90-something. 2004.
Oh, much later than I thought, actually.
Yeah, so, yeah, very little CGI, which most directors would have resorted to.
Right.
But they don't have the genius creativity that Michel Gondry and Charlie Kaufman have.
Yeah.
You know, like, there's a scene where he's walking through a library, and the library memory, his memory of the library is fading.
Mm-hmm.
And in the background, you see the lights start turning off.
Yeah.
So it's not an effect. It's just Gondry said, okay, I want the lights to slowly turn off. And then he's walking out of the library, but it's just one tracking shot.
Right.
And he's walking toward the camera, and the camera's backing up. And instead of him walking out of the library, he walks into the house of David Cross. And,
right.
And then the lights go completely dark in the where he came from. So they had to make a set of a house in a library and have him walk from a library into this house. You know, and
so
it looked
amazing.
And it looked so much like a house. Now, today they would just do CGI. They would just do some sort of transition green screen thing. But you can always tell. Like in this movie, you can tell. Like that was not a green screen. That was real. You know, or when they're in the beach house. And water starts to slosh into the beach house because the house memory is starting to decompose. And so the house is starting to kind of slide into the ocean, you know? And
right.
So it's just this, and he's standing in ocean water as it's sloshing in and he's inside. I don't know. It's just this amazing.
It is really beautiful. It has, you know, when I saw Inception.
Yeah.
And the Christopher Nolan movies.
Yeah.
Because he relies a lot on Unreal. He does CG too, but he does so many. What do you call them? Practical?
I'm calling it practical effects. I don't know if that's the right term. Yeah. Non-CG. Real effects.
But that kind of stuff, you know, it harkens back to like the Star Wars stuff where they used models. And yeah. I know that eventually digital will eventually be indistinguishable, but it's still not there. And so you could still feel the organic aspect of it.
Yeah, totally.
It's really amazing.
Now, this technology, I was thinking about it because in, you know, 2004... And before, because 2004 was before Facebook, the internet was still just basically used for Napster.
Before iPhone.
Yeah. And so I was thinking how this technology, because basically, spoiler alert, the movie is about this couple who they meet, they fall in love, they have a falling out, they have a lot of fights, and then the girlfriend decides to break up and have her memory erased of the boyfriend so she can just move on with her life. So there's this service where you go to and you can selectively this, you know, focused erasure of troubling memories. So you ask, I want you to erase every memory I have of my boyfriend. And then the boyfriend finds out and says, well, I want to do this too. And so he does the same service, but as it's happening, he starts to regret it. And because he doesn't want to, he wants to hold on to some of the good memories that he had with his girlfriend, even though it was painful that they broke up.
Yeah.
And so that's the story is he's desperately running from this erasure, and he even tries to hide her in his childhood by running into the childhood memories and putting her there so that, but then the doctor figures out what's happening, and he keeps trying to locate the doctor's like, what, you know, this is a harder erasure job than other jobs.
And he doesn't have like a panic button or something in the dream that he could just like hit. And by the way, it's so easy to relate to this, not to the machine, but you know, I had a girlfriend in high school that wrote me all these love notes, like tons of them. I had a box full of them. And later she broke my heart. And so when we broke up, I threw them all away.
Yeah.
And years later, I was like, oh my God, I would give anything to see even one of those notes.
Yeah, I've never understood people like you. And you're like most people. Back before there were digital, you know, photographs, most people would take every photograph they had of their ex, rip it up, and burn it. Now, if that's what you want to do, great. But to me, it's like, put it in a box, put it in the attic, don't ever look at it again. Because I guarantee you, in 20 years, you're going to be glad you held on to it.
I became that way. I became more like, you're not to the extreme you are. But I think that at that age, it was also at a time where I had to leave behind whole lives, you know?
Yeah.
And really, like when I moved up here at 15, I got one suitcase. Most of my life was left behind.
Right.
And so I sort of had this thing about like, yep, I just rip off band-aids and blah, blah. But later I started really missing these things and being like, oh my God.
Yeah. I mean, for instance, I've seen only maybe 4 or 5 photos of you as a kid.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
Yeah. Whereas if you look on Facebook for me, there's billions of people.
Whereas now I have, I have a lot more than I would have as a kid.
But I was thinking about how in this time, 2004 would have been the last kind of era of this where, because the whole idea is these two people have their memories erased of each other, and then there's letters sent to their friends saying, don't ever bring up the fact that we went out. You know what I mean?
Yes.
And don't ever refer to this person. And I was thinking about me in that time, you know, in the 90s, early 2000s, when if you dated someone and for like a year or something and then broke up, if you didn't really hang out with a lot of people and you didn't live near your family or something, there was a chance that only a handful of people even knew the two of you ever even dated.
That's true.
Whereas today with Facebook and other kinds of, and other easy ways of staying in contact, because also at the time, long distance costs money. I've probably in my life made 10 long distance calls. Now you know, you having relatives in Colombia.
Yeah.
Most of my relatives live in my, you know, area code.
Yeah.
So if you But anyway, my point is that communications weren't the way they are today.
Yeah, people didn't have cell phones. I mean, right. some people did, but a lot of them didn't.
Right.
And so if you stopped seeing someone, especially if they move,
yeah.
that could be it.
That was it. And so in this movie, I just thought it was funny how they erased their memories and then they just sent letters to like a couple people and said, don't ever bring up this person. And that was good enough for the most part to completely wipe that person from your life. Whereas today, obviously, it would be a lot harder because not only would you have to erase everything on Facebook and, you know, all the other kinds of things, but also a lot of people pay attention to you on Facebook, you know,
yes.
and they might ask you how you're
hundreds
doing.
Hundreds of people instead of like five.
Right. Anyway. So one of the things that I thought this movie was touching on was that we're destined to be with our soulmate, because the whole, again, spoiler alert, is when they have their memories erased, they actually find their way back to each other, even though they don't know each other again.
Right.
And then they fall, they sort of start falling in love. And then suddenly they discover through this random plot sort of twist that they both used to go out and they both had their memories erased. And then they decide, in spite of that, even though they're listening to recordings of themselves complain about each other, mm-hmm. they're like, but I really still want to do this again.
Yeah.
Even though it's going to be terrible in the end, I still want to fall in love with you and I still want there to be
right.
the good parts. And so it's implied that when you have a soulmate, you're destined for each other. What do you think about that?
Yeah, that's definitely the implication. Although there's also a darkness to that implication, because they're not saying that it's a good thing necessarily,
right?
Or that your soulmate means you're happy,
right? Because they didn't say, which is tempting, which is the beauty of Charlie Kaufman, because he's such a pessimist. they could have said something like, "We'll do it different this time," you
yeah,
know.
But
they
be better.
But they didn't imply that
nope.
at all.
Nope.
Like both of them knew this is a disaster waiting to happen that we're both right. walking into. But I still want to do it anyway.
In some ways, it's hard to use this when you're talking about really, really bad things, like someone being tortured or abused for years. But when it's the more mundane badness of life, like arguments, people crying, disappointments, in some ways, you're like, well, I mean, that's life. That's life. And so it's a gray line to see. Well, are you going to be happier with someone else? You might, you may not, who knows? And so sort of the point there being like, hey, it's good enough for me. You know, it's good enough for me.
Another ideal or virtue or idea that they're getting onto, I think, in this movie is it's better to have loved and lost to have never loved at all.
Right.
Right. What do you think about that one?
Yeah, it's sort of along those lines of like, look, we could either just not experience the one life we get, or we could experience it. The fact that loss comes with it, that's part of the equation.
It's also, I think, if when you really watch the movie and the various different scenes, it's about how real relationships work.
Yeah.
How we can hurt each other's feelings. How we eventually discover that our quote-unquote soulmate has major flaws that we have to deal with that don't change.
Yep.
How we need to put up with the bad if we want to get the good. It's just, there's all these like really accurate depictions of the way in which two people at the beginning, like there's this bit where he's listening. So he had his memory erased. He's listening to a recording of himself complain about her just before he had his memory erased. And so he's listening. He's like, and he says, and I hate her hair. She's always coloring her hair or something like that. And he says, that's not true. I like the fact that you color your hair. So because he is in the beginning of a relationship.
Right.
So he likes the fact that she colors her hair, these wacky colors. But by the end of the relationship, he hates it.
That represents the bad parts.
Right. And that's the way relationships go.
Yeah.
In the beginning, you love the fact that he's extroverted or he's introverted or he likes to joke around or he likes to sit around at home and watch a movie. You love that. But by the end of the relationship, you fucking hate it. You know
yes.
what I mean? You're just like, all he wants to do is sit around the house.
or it you're associated with some other thing that.
Right.
Now, I do think that there's this gray line, because imagine if in the recordings, they're hearing their recordings and it's like that time you cut me, or that time you hit me so hard I was in the hospital for 3 days. I think at that point, they might start being like, wait a minute.
Yeah, yeah. But there's nothing like that.
Right. Yeah.
So this movie, as with a lot of movies, is all about grief. You know, as you were saying, wouldn't we all love to forget painful memories? Do you think this is a good or a bad thing, Berto? To say this existed,
right?
Is it a good thing for us or a bad thing for us?
I think it depends. If the thing that in question that you would be trying to forget is blocking you in life, is sort of making your life really miserable, because it could be, right? Let's say we're talking about abuse as a child, and this makes you really dysfunctional, constantly worried. Maybe it even makes you want to abuse others in the similar ways. Well, maybe that is the kind of thing that you would want to erase.
Yeah.
But if you're talking about I wish I didn't remember these boring things that happened, or these frustrating things that happened, then the risk there is that you really end up with very little life.
Right.
And the other thing is the lessons you learned from those things, from those mistakes, from the errors, from the fall downs, right?
Yeah.
Those lessons, will you still retain the lessons if you forget the problems? Maybe not.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I would say. The only thing I would add to that is that if you erase, say, something like this, where you had a breakup that was difficult. If you erase it, you deny yourself the wisdom and the meanings that you pull from that. Through grief and through sadness and through loss, we derive meanings from that. We learn to appreciate life better. We learn to appreciate relationships better. We learn to, when we're in a good relationship, we have a complaint, we'll say, well, it's not as bad as the 20 other relationships I've been in. and I had to learn the hard way,
right,
that this relationship on average is better, or, you know, in comparison to another relationship is better.
That's a really great point, that if you erase all the quote unquote bad stuff, you don't have a frame of reference.
Yeah. Or when someone dies, do you want to erase them from your mind? Like those kinds of things, I'm thinking it would actually harm you. But I agree that if there was a traumatic event in your life, I think it's pretty clear that it would be better if you just forgot it.
Yeah. If it's severely affecting or just even seriously affecting you. But it's, of course it's tricky, because, it may not be easy. Like if it was something traumatic with, because imagine the side effect. Let's say it was your parent that abused you, or someone close to you, and you erased the trauma, and now you go to that person, and you there. As far as you know, there was never anything bad that happened.
Right.
You could be very vulnerable.
Right.
To that relationship.
Right. Obviously, there's a lot of nuances there, but the final shot. Do you remember the very final shot?
Not well, no.
They are, the Kate Winslet and Jim Carrey are running on the beach in the snow, and they're happy.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And they're running away from the camera. And the shot actually cuts back in time and kind of restarts a couple times. So they're running down, and then it cuts, and then it cuts back to when they're about halfway down, and then they run forward, and then they cut back. And I was thinking that this is because they keep erasing their memories.
Yeah, that could be.
So
that's so frustrating.
So that they can fall in love again, you know?
Groundhog Day.
well, this I could see a legitimate model for having a wonderful relationship, because the first year of a good match is one of the best feelings you could ever have.
Right.
And you could legitimately engineer this by periodically wiping your memory of that person.
Always 1 year.
Yeah. And you could stay in a honeymoon phase, in a blissful honeymoon phase for the rest of your life.
This is it. We got to start the company. Honeymoon.com. Or eternalhoneymoon.com.
Eternal sunshine of the spotless mind. That's what it means, is you don't have a spot on your mind, and so you're eternally in the sunshine. So I'm going to talk about the movie a little bit in terms of where it fits in. This is a rough list, but I'm going to, what number do you think I have Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind out of the 3,000 movies that I've rated? What rank do you think it is?
I rank it really high, but I'd say for you, it's in your top 20.
It's in my top five. It's number five.
Wow.
Yeah. When I saw this movie, I just loved it and still do.
Yeah,
you know what my number one is.
Well, so I always forget, because it used to be Brazil, and more recently you changed it to Prisoners. No.
Clockwork Orange.
Clockwork Orange, yes.
Didn't I give you a Clockwork Orange shirt?
Not a shirt. Oh, yeah.
Your Clockwork Orange shirt that you bought yourself. I got you a Beatles shirt. Anyway.
Wait.
Clockwork Orange, number one. Brazil, number two. What do you think is my number three? I've already talked.
Oh, 2001 or something?
2001, ick.
Okay, no.
Empire Strikes Back.
Oh, okay, fine. But you must have a Kubrick in there somewhere.
Clockwork Orange.
Oh, yeah, duh.
number four, Scorsese. Goodfellas.
Goodfellas over...
Over Casino?
I guess. No, yeah, you're right. Goodfellas would
be So Clockwork Orange, Brazil, Empire Strikes Back, Goodfellas, Eternal Sunshine. And then from there down, any other guesses as to what would be in the next list of 20?
Let's see. Yes. You must have, what's it called? Blade Runner in there somewhere.
No, I'm actually not a huge, I like the movie, okay. But I'm not one of those people that really.
I'm like it. You, but I came to it later in life, so.
I did it, and I still... I mean, it's fine. It's a fine movie, but it annoys me, actually. There's certain parts of it that annoy me. The way the androids... The way they sort of fix on the androids a lot, and they're acting all kind of crazy and weird.
Oh, I know. Jackie Brown.
No, I love that movie, but that's not in my top 25.
Okay.
But another one of his movies is...
Oh, because I thought Jackie Brown was your favorite of his.
Okay.
Then if it's not that one... And it's not Pulp, then is it Reservoir Dogs?
Yeah, Reservoir Dogs.
Okay.
I mean, part of this list is based on the effect the movie had on me.
Yeah.
Like, I would rather watch Jackie Brown now than Reservoir Dogs, like if I just popped one in the VHS.
But the effect, okay.
But when Reservoir Dogs came out in 92, I was like, I mean, it was a brand new genre.
Yeah.
And
I never saw Reservoir Dogs before I saw Pulp Fiction. So when I that for me was Pulp Fiction. When I saw it, I was like, "What am I watching? There's nothing like this."
Right, and Pulp Fiction was amazing, but I sort of feel like Pulp Fiction doesn't really stand up, because it's like
for me it does
really.
Okay, but again, it similar to what you're saying, I remember that feeling I had when I saw it. Like as an example, one that doesn't stand up for me. But I had a good feeling at the time, was The Usual Suspects.
Yeah.
That one actually is... have you watched it recently?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
It doesn't stand up.
No. It actually didn't stand up for me at the time. Like, it took a while. Like, I saw it. Like, that was like mid-90s, late 90s or something. And it right away, people didn't really talk about it. It wasn't until like 10 years later that there was all this Kaiser Sose talk. And I remember you actually sort of bringing up, you know... Usual Suspects.
I saw it when it came out, and not in the theater, but I saw it on
all, VHS. All I remember is like there was a time when I didn't hear anything about The Usual Suspects, and then I suddenly started hearing a lot about it because it started to become kind of a cult classic or something.
I mean, I saw it in college, so when it came out, and everyone that was talking about it was like, "Oh my god, it's crazy!" And then I saw it, and I liked it. I loved the twist and stuff like that. But years later, looking back, I'm like, yeah, it's not that great.
Right.
It's good, but right. It's, yeah.
I mean, part of it could just be that sort of movie has been so played out in some ways. And the twist at the end device has also been used. There weren't a lot of movies back then that had clever twists like that one did. You know?
That's true. And but when I tried watching it a few years ago, it felt boring to me.
Yeah, it's kind of boring. Yeah. So any other guests for my top 30 movies of all time?
I should be able to. About a Boy or Boyhood.
No, that's your favorite movie.
You didn't like it that much?
I like it. Yeah. But we're talking out of 3,000 movies, okay. This is the top 30 movies.
Okay. There's There Will Be Blood.
No, love that movie, but not top 30. It's not
one of his movies.
One of his movies.
Philip Hoffman or Philip.
You mean
Philip, what's his name?
Oh, Philip Seymour Hoffman? Anderson, Paul Thomas.
Paul Anderson. PTA.
Do I have a PTA movie in here? I don't think I do.
Oh, but what about Boogie Nights?
No. That's a Paul Thomas Anderson movie.
Oh, okay.
Plus, have you rewatched that movie?
Yes.
It seriously is not as good as when it came out. I mean, it was a great movie when it came out.
I still like it, but you're right. It does.
But
I
think my favorite movie of this. So, There Will Be Blood, definitely one of my favorites of his. But I also loved the Frogs Falling from the Sky.
Yeah. Magnolia.
I really
Liked
that.
But I now know, of course. Darjeeling or no, the other one, the Hotel.
No. But you're getting in there. You're close.
Okay. Well, then the Royal.
No, that definitely could compete, but Moonrise Kingdom.
Oh, okay, of course.
Royal Tannenbaum
says you are in Moonrise Kingdom,
right? Moonrise Kingdom just hits all the buttons for me. Royal Tannenbaum's, I could arguably also put in this top list because I just love that movie.
See, my top five are American Psycho, and Rushmore.
So Rushmore is in my top.
Oh, great!
Yeah. So Godfather Part Two, Fight Club, The Matrix, which I sort of, I was like, The Matrix, really?
It deserves a spot, man.
Yeah, it's a great movie. The Thing from 1982 with Kurt Russell.
Yeah, right. I would not do that one, but I understand why you do it. Because I didn't have that attachment to it.
Yeah. If I watched it now, I'd be like, yeah, it's okay. Yeah. But I watched that movie 100 times.
Everyone who I've ever talked to that watched it as a kid feels that way about it.
Yeah.
I never saw it till much later as an adult.
Unforgiven.
Oh, yeah. That's a great movie.
Inside Out. I'm going to put that one in there. I don't know if I'm just sort of still in love with that movie, but I just think that movie has so many elements to it.
Yeah.
City of God.
Oh, yeah.
Memento.
Of course, Memento.
Big Lebowski.
Yep.
Saving Private Ryan. Which I debated as to whether or not
I'm surprised about. I love Saving Private Ryan.
I love a good war movie, man. I love war movies, and Saving Private Ryan is one of the most perfect war movies of all time. L.A. Confidential.
Yep, that's good.
Seven Samurai from 1954, the Japanese.
Yeah.
Princess Mononoke. Napoleon Dynamite.
See, for me, Spirited Away is... I like Spirited Away better.
Yeah, it's definitely... If Princess Mononoke had not been made, then I would put Spirited. But Napoleon Dynamite, I think, is one of the most perfect comedies of all time. Think about how many things in that movie are in our culture.
Yeah.
You know, just...
I commend the ability that you have to make these lists, because for me, it seems really hard.
Well... So it's easy for me because I rate as soon as I watch a movie, as I'm walking out of the theater, I pull out my phone, I open my IMDb app, and I quickly rate it, which takes 3 seconds. And by the end of 20 years of doing that, then I can go on the website and just say rank all of my ratings by rating, and then I can just copy and paste it into this.
I can see if you're going by that initial reaction, that makes sense. For me, since I don't have that tracked, first of all, it's harder. I'd have to sit there and go through all the movies and remember how I felt.
Which, you know.
But I will say this. Like, there are some movies that I put in some of my top, I don't know if it's top 10 or whatever, that are not what you would traditionally consider being maybe in the top 25 of a list, but it's because they're so rewatchable for me and they're so entertaining. So White Men Can't Jump is an example. Yeah. That's one of my favorite movies of all time.
Right. My next one, Galaxy Quest, is kind of like that.
Yeah, sure.
Galaxy Quest is not, you know, a masterpiece.
Right.
But this movie I've watched 100 times and could watch it 100 more times and still enjoy it.
Right.
You know? And so that's one of those inclusions, you know. The Holy Grail from 75, I think, is one of the most perfect movies and has never been recreated. I mean, think about a movie that's like The Holy Grail.
No.
Can you think of any movie, even a Monty Python movie, that even comes close to The Holy Grail? It's just, and that movie, again, 75, back when, like,
that's when I was born.
When, like, you know, Chips was on TV and shit.
So let me tell you about that movie. Growing up in Colombia, I never saw it, never heard of it. Not at all. Not one bit. Now, picture this. I'm in high school in Tacoma, and it's a weekend, and I go over to my friend Paul's. And he's like, okay, today we're watching a movie. And I'm like, yeah, what are we watching? It's Monty Python and the Holy Grail. And like, he said words. But he might as well have said, and I was like, what? It sounded bizarre. I asked him, what is it about? And he said, like, you just got to watch it. Like, I don't get it. And we sat there and we watched it. And I was like, what am I watching? This is crazy.
Yeah.
Like, this movie, because I hadn't been exposed to that style of humor.
Yeah.
Never
either.
Seen any Monty Python. And it was so amazing.
Yeah. My brother was, he's 7 years older than me. And so he would have been like in like late high school or something.
Yeah.
And we had one of the first VHS recorders in the neighborhood. And he had rented it, and I was walking through the living room, and he's like, Kirk, you need to watch this movie. And I was like, what is it? It's called Monty Python. It's by Monty Python. And I'm like, who's Monty Python?
Who's Monty Python?
And he's like, no, Monty Python is this group of five guys. It's a comedy troupe. And I was like, why do they call themselves Monty Python? I mean, because to me, I mean, if you think about it, it's like getting a group together and calling yourself like Jeff Anderson, you know, because Monty Python, that's conceivably a first and last name.
Yeah.
And
well,
so
for me, all I could think of is Python. OK, so it's like snakes and stuff.
Yeah. So I was just like, who? Monty? And I remember just being so confused, just like you, just right off the like, what is that? And then I was rolling.
Yeah.
And rolling in a way that I'd never, I mean, I'd laughed before, obviously, but not there. It was touching on a particular humor in my bones that had never been tickled before.
Yeah.
You know?
And by the way, I didn't even know what a grail was at the time. Like a holy grail. I didn't even know what that was referring to.
I didn't know either. Didn't grow up with that sort of, I was like, grail. Okay. Big Trouble, Little China.
Yeah, that's a good one.
My friend Broadhead, you know him. He just bought the board game, so we got
to
play.
Oh, I would love to play that.
Annie Hall, of course.
That's good. That's a good movie.
The Road Warrior from 81.
Yeah. Okay, I would see that. I would put that on my top 25.
That is one of the most perfect action movies of all time. The Talented Mr. Ripley from 99.
Love that movie.
Yeah.
Matt Damon was unbelievable in that.
Yeah, Jude Law, Philip Seymour Hoffman.
Oh, I saw that recently, like last year or the year before. It breaks your heart. Like, it's so rich. That movie is crazy.
That movie, it's just a perfect story. And the way it feels, I don't know, just everything's so great. Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon from 2000.
Oh, I forgot about that.
The movie Once.
Man, see, this is my problem. You'd ask me, give me a 25, and then all of a sudden you'd be like, I can't believe you didn't put... Well, see, I might have put Hero in mine, you know, the Jet Li Hero.
I don't know if I've even seen that movie.
Oh, it's like Crouching Tiger.
Oh,
like that epic, like.
Oh, maybe crazy. I have seen that.
Yeah, but with Jet Li, and it's really amazing visuals, like
amazing visuals, but it doesn't have the emotion that Crouching Tiger has.
Probably, I was a lot younger when I saw both of them, but I actually, to me, I preferred Hero slightly, but you know, I'm sure it's not as good, but I personally thought Hero was just mind-blowing. But you're right. Now that I think about it, Crouching Tiger is probably more epic. I need to watch them both again as more of an adult.
Yeah. The screenplay of Eternal Sunshine was by Charlie Kaufman, who also wrote Being John Malkovich, Human Nature, which is an unknown movie, pretty good, Human Nature. Also directed by Michel Gondry. It's a good movie. Charlie Kaufman adaptation, which
that's in my top 10.
Yeah, I thought about that would have been in my top 30, but I recently watched it and was like, yeah, this is still amazing, but I'm not as jazzed about it. I still have it as a 10 out of 10. It's just
I recently watched it with my brother. He had never seen it. I made him watch it a few months ago. Oh man, that I like the conceptual layered. Yeah. I even like Synecdoche, New York, although not in my top 25. I just love that movie.
Right. Charlie Kaufman, again, Eternal Sunshine, 04, 08, he made Synecdoche. So imagine myself being John Malkovich, Human Nature, Adaptation, Eternal Sunshine of Spotless Mind. Everyone, there's this, and he waits 4 years. Like every other movie is out like 1 year after each other. He waits 4 years. He finally comes out with this new movie, Synecdoche, New York.
Yeah.
Oh my God, it's going to be amazing. Yeah. And he directed this too. It was his first. And I thought, man, this is going to be, you know, a perfection.
Yeah.
And I only watched it once, as we've talked about before. I need to watch it again.
I would not recommend that movie to anyone, like not anyone. But me personally, maybe I'm just like a masochist for his work.
No, people love it.
I loved it.
Critics love that. Then last year, Anomalisa, he also directed that. That's the stop motion.
I own it and I've yet to watch it.
It's good. It's good. It's good.
Yeah.
Yeah. Interesting, unique, total Charlie Kaufman. He's back in the saddle.
Back in the saddle.
With Anomalisa.
It's ridiculous that I haven't seen it. I have no excuse.
You have to sit down and watch it. Don't be playing video games on your phone while you're doing it.
I don't play. What the wait? Where did this come from?
I'm telling everyone. I don't know about you, but a lot of people watch TV.
I see what you're saying.
While they're playing,
I thought you were telling me. I'm like, wait, what?
Eternal Sunshine, directed by Michel Gondry, who also directed Human Nature, Eternal Sunshine, The Science of Sleep. Michel Gondry is like, oh my God, Human Nature, Eternal Sunshine. This guy's a genius. And then he makes The Science of Sleep, which was not great.
I don't think I saw that.
Then he made Be Kind, Rewind.
I did see that.
Which was okay.
That had some funny aspects to it.
Yeah, but it was no great. Eternal Sunshine.
No.
Then The Green Hornet
with Seth
Rogen. It wasn't bad.
Oh, okay.
And then three other movies recently that I haven't even heard of. And so I don't understand what's happening. And there was a time when Michel Gondry I would watch featurettes, just him talking about making a movie. Like, I just thought he was a genius. And he hasn't had a good project in a while.
I
feel like Spike Jonze is similar. There was a time when Michel Gondry, Charlie Kaufman, Spike Jonze just had the world by the horns in terms of film. And like, they just haven't done anything recently. Yeah. Except for Anomalisa, which is great.
You must have some David Fincher. Oh, Fight Club.
Fight Club.
Yeah. I know it's...
Which, when I saw... It's still a great movie.
Yeah.
Just visceral, interesting. Yeah. But when I saw it in the theater, I wanted to riot.
Yeah.
I wanted to jump up out of my seat and tear down the capitalistic system.
Dude, that movie was amazing. Now, I also love Primer. I would put Primer in my top 10, even though it's another one that I'd be very careful to recommend to anyone. It's not well made in some ways. I mean, it is for me, but it's a very, very, very low budget. You know the one I'm talking about, the time travel.
Would you put any Paul Thomas Anderson movies in top?
I really like, is it in Punch Drunk Love?
Yeah.
I
took Punch Drunk Love off of this list at the last moment because although it's one of my top movies of all time, I was thinking, I don't know if I really think it's...
You know what? I'm going to do this. I'm going to do an exercise, do a top 25. It's going to take me a bit and it's probably going to be very imperfect, but I'm going to do it for myself.
And then hold on to it. And then as time goes, you can change it. All right. Let's give swag away. I'm going to scroll down and you tell me when to stop.
All right.
I'm scrolling down on the 420-ish
Are you doing
patrons.
It right now? Are you scrolling?
I'm scrolling.
I'm going to wait a little longer because normally I go, stop.
Paul from Denmark, it looks like.
Oh.
D-E. Is that Denmark?
Yeah. That sounds Paul Denmarkish.
Paul from Denmark. So, patron Paul, I will send you some swag in the mail. thank you so much, everyone, for being patrons, like patron DeAndrea and Sarah.
Although DE could also be Germany.
DE could be Germany. Oh, Deutschland.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Deutschland.
Westfall. Nordrhein-Westfalen. Munster.
That's Germany.
Germany. Deutschland. Okay. Münster has the umlaut.
Münster.
Patron Karen and Jason and Gay Young and Ashley and Megan and Tasha and my mom. My mom's a patron of the podcast. If my mom is a patron of the podcast, then surely you can be a patron of the podcast.
Oh, a podcast only a mother would love.
Well, that does it for that episode of Psychology in Seattle. Thanks for joining us out there. Let us know what you think of our talk about Eternal Sunshine. And take care of yourself because
you deserve it.